You know what that music means every Wednesday? Time to bring in Tim Hasselbeck, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here on this rainy Wednesday. Timmy, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. What's new and exciting?
Not this weather, that's for sure.
No, it's really not.
I'm kind of break. I was actually just thinking about it. Are we like approaching like some record for rain from like December through January?
It feels like it. I don't know what it is, but it feels like it.
I mean, I feel like, you know, when I moved down here from the Northeast, part of what I was looking forward to was it was like, you know what? Like, at least if I wanted to get outside and go for a walk, you know, I might not be in South Florida, but, you know, at least it's not going to be in the single digits. Well, sure enough, single digits followed up by a little bit of rain. I'm like, what's the deal, man?
Yeah.
Like, someone's controlling it, trying to alleviate traffic or something.
Yeah, it you just don't know from year to year. Some winters are really mild and really weak, and then some it feels like winter for a couple months. But then the good news is it goes away quick. It's not like the Northeast where it still snows in April and sometimes May.
Well, listen, my wife and daughter were in Massachusetts, in Boston over the weekend, and a 1.5 day trip turned into like a 4.5 day trip because it canceled flights.
Oh my gosh! Holy cow!
Needless to say, my sons were like, "Dude, like, we get it. You can make scrambled eggs, but like, what else are you bringing to the table here?"
Let's mix it up a little bit.
Dad, you are limited. What else you got, man?
Yeah, I'm really like, dude. I mean, seriously, like, yeah, we thought you were cool, but now we're like, we're over it.
Where's mom?
I was like, listen, boys, you see it, stay in your lane. Right, stay in my lane.
That is great. So since we last spoke, when we were sitting here doing the show was when this stuff started circulating, and we're like, what? This can't be right. He's, you know, we've used to do a weekly with Trent. He's a Northern California guy. Doesn't he have all these, like, elite passing academies? Nah, he's not coming here to coach high school football. Well, sure enough, Trent Dilfer's moving to Nashville, and he's going to be the next head coach at Lipscomb Academy. Well, When did you know about this, and were you holding out on us?
Let me think. When did I talk to you guys? On Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Yeah, I might have been holding out on you a little bit, but not long. I mean, I know that it came together pretty quickly for Trent, and quite honestly, I think for Lipscomb in terms of, you know, when they started to, you know, kind of, I guess, post the job and have it out there, and then, you know, a conversation with Trent, which, you know, eventually turned into, you know, potential with him, you know, for him to become the coach, and, you know, I think fortunate for the school, and I think Trent would say it for him as well, fortunate for him that there's just a lot of factors that probably came together that made it make sense for him, you know, at this time. And, you know, you mentioned the passing academy stuff. He's obviously been working with Elite 11 for a bunch of years now. And, you know, anybody that's seen him, you know, coach through that Elite 11 stuff, you know, has been able to see just his passion for, you know, the game of football and then also working with kids of that age. And, you know, hopefully having a, you know, a really good impact on them. So, I don't know a whole lot about, you know, Lipscomb's history with football or anything like that. But, you know, I certainly, you know, think that Trent will do a very good job on and off the field. And, you know, they're probably better all around because of it would be, you know, sometimes a guy, it's like, hey, this guy played football. He's going to go coach. It's like, well, just because you were a really good player doesn't mean that you can coach it, and I think Trent can coach it, and so that'll be exciting for that school and for those kids, and I think it really will be rewarding for Trent.
But I mean, I look, we get it. We know why. You know, we get it. We live here. We're very, very biased. I don't need to say why would you move to Nashville. We get it. Everybody's moving here, but he kind of always struck me as a Northern California guy.
Yeah, well, he didn't. So Trent lived in you know, kind of retired, so to speak, in kind of the San Francisco, you know, the Bay Area. But, he actually was living in Austin, Texas.
Oh, really?
For the last year and a half.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that people know this. His youngest daughter, Delaney, has committed to go to play volleyball at Lipscomb,
at Lipscomb
University.
Yeah.
She'll be a freshman in 2020. And Trent also has a daughter, Tori, who transferred from TCU to Louisville this semester to play volleyball. So, you know, not that he's I gave him a hard time. I was like, wait, you know, you're going to you're not going to, like, let go and let your daughters, like, go to college without, like, you're going to move in the dorms with it. But, you know, you know, that's not what it is. But, you know, listen, an opportunity to be close to your kids and practice and play and some of that stuff, I'm sure that aspect of it does not hurt.
Can you confirm or deny that you are kicking Chase McCabe out of the guest house and Trent is moving into the guest house?
No, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, and I hope Trent's listening because he's back in town today and stayed at my house last night. Chase is probably a much better guest than Trent. Trent doesn't make his bed. Okay, he likes to stay up too late, you know. So he's a, you know, Elizabeth and I, it's like you, me, and Dupree right now with Trent. We got to get him settled in.
So Chase is probably very relieved to hear this, that maybe he was on the outs. He was getting nervous, but not so.
Yeah, I want Chase. Chase's got to be back in the mix. I hope Chase doesn't feel threatened. He knows.
Nice reference. Outstanding. I wish you would
have done. I mean what I said about it. I think I know this. Trent's really excited about it. You know, judging by, you know, kind of the news that it made at the school and certainly the excitement that it seemed to generate, you know, for the school. And listen, talking to the coach of the Smyrna Braves, and I told you guys that, you know, Hutch and I coached in youth football this year. And I think we would all say that there's been a coach somewhere in our life that has made a really good impact on us. You know, not all of them have, but at some point, like, there's been a coach that has made a really good impact, you know, on probably all of our lives and probably many of the people that are listening right now. And so that's a really rewarding thing. And I think that it's and I think that's exciting for, listen, the guys that are going to be coached by Trent, but also, listen, anybody that's coaching a youth sport or a high school sport, you know, in this state, and to have an opportunity to have a big impact on somebody's life is, honestly, it's an awesome thing. So, I think Trent will do a good job with that.
Well said. By the way, there was a big powwow last night with the Smyrna Braves, the coaches, and, you know, we were just trying to make sure everybody was cool with keeping the band together, and I'm here to report the band is staying together, so we're going
to
keep.
Was the meeting to talk about the managerial structure or the players that want to keep going?
I'm going to let that meeting be private and leave all that off the air.
You've been demoted to bullpen coach. But you're like, well, wait a minute, we're still working on the pitching machine.
We'll have those discussions off the air. We're not going to do this on the air. I'm just telling you, I'm here to report the Smyrna Braves, the band is staying together. Everything is good. We're going to keep trying to keep winning championships. That's what we're here to do. The quiet time. By the way, we learned quiet time from Trent. That was where that whole term, the first time we heard that, he kept talking about the quiet time. That's where, you know, greats become great.
I'm sure you guys will have him on at some point. Okay, I'm sure you have him on at some point. You need to call him out for all the things, all the terms and things that he has stolen from me over the years. I think that he signs his emails above the X's and O's or beyond the X's and O's, which is something that he has stolen from me. So Trent's got an amazing. He'll say it one time and, like, he'll credit you, and then he'll just use it by himself every time that point forward. So there's a good chance quiet time has been stolen from somebody. So next time you're on with him, you just need to be like, hey, listen, all right, so who'd you steal quiet time from? Like, we're all in on it, but, like, tell us who's really it was.
So you're saying he kind of feels like if he puts you in the footnotes, then he's free to use your material anytime?
He just needs to credit you one time.
Right, one time, and then it's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's like hey, I put you in the the reference page, in January of 2010. So I'm good to use it now in 2019.
All right, we gave out the odds in the last segment before coming to you. Right now, the 49ers are the odds-on favorite to land Antonio Brown. Jets were second, Bills third, Cardinals four. Then it gets really interesting. Colts, Texans, and then on down in the same group with the Packers, Broncos, and Steelers are the Titans. Where do you think?
Well, there's a lot of desperate teams on that list. Yeah. I think the real question, Tim, and this is what I'd love to know from you, is what would you be willing to give up for him at this stage of his career, knowing what we know?
Well, I mean, how many years do you have left on the deal? Three years left on his deal? Is that right?
Three at a hefty price.
Yeah, but it's not like he's not going to be the highest paid receiver in the game towards the end of that deal, is he?
No.
And let's just say that he has produced like a guy that should be paid a high price. So you should know that going in. But knowing his issues, what would you give up? Knowing that in the past, guys like Randy Moss and Terrell Owens at one time or another have been able to be had for a mid-round draft pick.
Yeah, so here's what I would say about his deal. He basically, when you call it, he's making, in the neighborhood of 12.5 to, 11.5 each year for the next 3 years, okay?
Okay.
But you're talking about, cap hits that are significant because of the bonus, obviously. So $22 million, $18 million, $19 million. So it is a hefty price when you look at, there's going to be other, you look at Odell's deal or you look at, some of that stuff. Like, it's going to be on par with guys that are, it's not going to blow out of the water what guys are making around the league with his similar production. So what are you willing to give up? Look, for 3 years on a guy when you consider what, different stages, but I think Golden Tate was a third. I think that it was a first for Amari Cooper, obviously. I think you're probably talking in a first-round draft pick, most likely, for a guy that, in the right offense, is going to catch well over 100 balls. So I don't think there's any doubt that that's the compensation. In terms of the list of the teams of who might be interested, I don't see any way that he ends up in the AFC. I think the Steelers, as frustrated and angry as they may be, realize that they know how good he is. They know how talented he is. And the, sending him to the Colts or something like that, there's no way.
All right, we'll come back. We'll touch on the hiring of Arthur Smith within as the new OC and a lot more with Tim Hasselbeck, our NFL expert every Wednesday on the program. More with him next on Darren and Donick, Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tim Hasselbeck every Wednesday. Not every rainy Wednesday, just today. Starting at noon. We said... Going into the break, Arthur Smith, the Titans decide to hire within, promote him to offensive coordinator from tight ends coach. He's been in the building for 8 years. He's survived a lot of staffs, of course, son of Fred Smith. What did you think of the hire?
Well, I think it made a lot of sense when you consider, some of the stuff that we had talked about. Look, Marcus is going to be the quarterback next year, and they went from, what they were doing, under Mike Mularkey, which obviously, Arthur was a part of. And then you think about like kind of the transition. It was something new, when Matt LaFleur comes in. I mean, that was the idea. It was something new. Maybe there would be more up-tempo. Maybe there would be more spread elements. Some of the stuff that quite honestly helped Marcus become, the second pick of the draft the year he came out. And if you were to really go back and just look at the eventual success of the team, if you just kind of go back and be like, all right, well, where was the team at its best offensively? I think you could
easily make the argument that they were better when the 2018 offense was operating a little bit more like the 2017 offense. And I guess probably for an effort of, you know, an effort for consistency in terms of terminology and verbiage, as well as, you know, an understanding. And we've talked about this a number of times about, look, you get a new coach come in, he's got to learn the players. Like, he might have something that he wants to do on offense, but he's got to learn the strengths and weaknesses of the guys that he's coaching and what they can and can't do and what they're good at. So I think staying inside, you know, helps you with all of that stuff. And if you don't survive multiple staffs and stay in one spot, if you don't know a lot of football and are, you know, respected in terms of like the type of teacher you are and how you relate to guys, I mean, it's hard to survive a staff change. And so being able to do that, I think, speaks highly of him as a teacher and just somebody in terms of how he relates to players.
Tim, if you're Mike Vrabel, how do you have a feel for whether a guy could be a good play caller or not? It's such an art, right? Just that being able to have the feel for a game.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you really know unless you've seen somebody do it. And so, you know, I don't know how they have, you know, set up different practice elements, if they, you know, if you've had the opportunity to do things, you know, within a practice. You know, a lot of times you practice situations, you know, quite a bit, and you do it even in the off season. And so that's why you see sometimes coaches, use Byron Leftwich as the example. I mean, Bruce Arians lets him call a preseason game to get a sense of, okay, well, you know, how would it be as a play caller? Or, you know, if things aren't working sometimes with a play caller, you might say, hey, listen, we're going to take a few suggestions on some of these situations and get a sense of that. But, you know, I don't think you really know, Willie, until you see somebody do it. And I can just say that, you know, some guys are, you know, relentless planners, and they have their call sheet, and they do a good job of staying disciplined to the call sheet, because it's like, look, this is why we're doing it. We know, you know, we've put a lot of preparation in beforehand that we're expecting this. And so, you know, they stick to it. And if you're a really good planner, and if you're good at kind of forecasting things out, then I think it's beneficial to stick to that. There have been other guys I've been around that's not who they are, but they just have a natural feel for a game. They really do a good job of just even, like, I'll never forget, just use this as an example. Steve Spurrier would be this type of guy.
Okay.
So Steve Spurrier is watching, you know, the corner, you know, after he has a, you know, he sits on a route a little bit and has a pass breakup and is jawing at the wide receiver. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, he's going to double move that guy as soon as possible. You know what I mean? He's like, there's a fight going on between these two guys. The defensive back is getting aggressive. Doesn't want a ball caught on him. Like, we're double moving him right now.
Okay.
You know, and so I just think that everyone's got their own different style, and that's what makes, you know, various people unique.
So, Tim, there's a lot of outrage, of course, in New Orleans. We got the whole thing with the lawsuit and all that stuff. Everybody wants to do something about what happened on that interference play that wasn't called. The question is, as you get further and further removed from it, is what would you do if you wanted to come in with some sort of challenge system? The thing that was interesting, I thought a lot about it. In hockey, you have the goaltender interference. That's the closest equivalent that you have now. But the difference is, in football, you would be challenging something that was not called a penalty. So how would you do it? Can it be done if you wanted to?
Well, I think yes, it can be done. You just have to be willing for the game to stop. You know, obviously in that situation now, it was a stoppage of clock because it was an incomplete pass. But, you know, there's time elements of a game. And so, you know, when you start getting into, you know, stopping the game to challenge things, does that create some type of competitive advantage to a team that has the ball and is up against the clock? And, you know, so there are various things that, you know, you could look at. Or just, you know, look, take the roughing the passer penalties. You know, like, look at the one on Brady. Like, that I guess there was another penalty on that play, but like that could sustain a drive, right? That could extend the drive, and it's really shameful, to be honest. How do you do it? Look, I think you allow people to challenge stuff, and you know, we don't want to get in an environment where you're challenging everything, but you know, you get a limited number of challenges as it is. Even if you win them, you know, sometimes they can go away, even if just because you use them up. Maybe it's an opportunity where you have the ability to challenge, you know, one penalty a game. And so there's also, you know, I guess at that point, it comes down to, being able to, as a coach, kind of be able to manage that correctly. And say, like, do I really want to challenge this big call, even if it's a scoring play in the first quarter? Like, do I want to do that? Or because I might get a PI call in the fourth quarter that might really be the difference. And so I think that at that point, you know, coaches know that they have one of them, and it doesn't slow the game down too much. Like, I don't think that would be that difficult.
So you're in favor of it. You would be in favor of looking at it.
Here's all I could think of, and I've told you guys this before. Like, I try to, like, when you ask me a question, like, I try to be like, okay, what was I thinking exactly in that moment? What was I thinking about handing the ball to Luke Stocker in that moment?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So for me, I'm watching it, and all I could think about was I was in New Orleans in training camp. I was down there with those guys. Talked to Sean Payton off the, you know, kind of off to the side. Talked to Drew Brees off to the side just about their situation. And both of those guys were just like, we think we're good enough to win a Super Bowl. Like, this actually, I didn't even think it was August yet. Like, they thought they were that good, and they were. I thought that was a great team. That's a great football team. They should be going to the Super Bowl. The reality is that's a pass interference play. They have the ball, it's first down, and ultimately they should end up kicking a field goal with, you know, about, you know, less than 20 seconds left on the clock. They should be going to the Super Bowl. And they're not, because the refs, just like players can do, choked. I think the moment was too big for the referees. I mean, it's not even close.
Right.
Here's the deal. If it's not pass interference, it's a hit to the head of a defenseless receiver. Like, there's multiple fouls on the play right in the same spot. I mean, it's not, like, you know. So I think you just, like, to me, the fact that there's a team not going to the Super Bowl because of that, and I really believe they're not going to the Super Bowl because of that, that's not okay. There's too much work being put in to have somebody make a mistake that was that blatant. Now, listen, if there was a PI call and we're sitting here arguing, you know, was it really pass interference? Did his backhand hook him? Did it?
Right. There was one like that, yeah. For example, in the 49ers-Ravens Super Bowl late in the game. Remember? I don't even remember which way it went.
Crabtree, right?
But it was a very debatable one, and you could talk about it all day, but there was at least debate. Of course, there was no debate in this one. And that's the nightmare for any league.
And really, here's what I'll tell you. The referees choked in that game as well. You go back to the safety that the Ravens took in that game. Okay, they snapped it to their punter and they took a safety. And every single one of their guys in pump protection just grabbed and held guys, right?
Right.
Not a single flag was thrown. There should have been 10 flags on the ground. Guys were getting tackled. And the referees didn't throw a flag. Like, I think what people have to realize, too, is part of what happens for these officials, I mean, let's be honest, like, you're out there, you know, in a sense, competing alongside Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara and Drew Brees, and, like, you're out there doing that. And so to think that, you know, that you know, some guy who's 53 years old and had to, you know, lube up on the Bengay before he went out to the game is going to be able to make the decision. And I don't think they can. And I think they choke. And so that's why having somebody in a booth, here's the other aspect of this, having somebody in the booth that's like, look, I'm looking at this and this is bad. This is a penalty. We need to call it such. Like, I think you have to have the ability for somebody to be up top, be like, you got this one wrong, guys.
Right. That's look, I'm not just saying the situation room in baseball. Yeah. Or hockey was the first. Now baseball has it. I do wonder if that's the way we're going here in football, because no one wants to have the nightmare that the NFL has right now. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, and look, I'm not trying to be disparaging of these guys, because I think it is a hard job, and I would not do a very good job of it. But, you know, you look at the Edelman muffed punt situation, and it's like, oh, gosh. I mean, look, we watched it a million times and can't tell. So, you know, I'm not saying this job is easy and that it'll end up being perfect. But I do think that I think the guys out there are overwhelmed. You know, I think that you have world-class athletes, you know, playing and competing on that environment with all that speed, and then you think of the magnitude of the moment. And listen, some guys can't perform on that stage. And again, I'll raise my hand and tell you, I wouldn't be even able to run up and down the field with these guys, and I'm younger than a lot of them.
So, yeah, but you just had surgery.
It's true. Here's the thing. I didn't just have surgery. I just, but yes.
Well, it's been months, but I mean, you know what I mean.
9 months to be exact, but yes.
But so, who's counting?
Who's counting? Just the guy that can barely go up and down the stairs. So, but I think you're, like, to me, it's a shame. And listen, in hockey, could you imagine a team gets to go to, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals? And you're like, well, wait a second, guys. We have a rule in place, like that's goalie interference, and we're looking at it. And he skated through the goalie, and that's why they scored. And do nothing about it?
Yeah, I think that's what we discussed a lot this week. Is it's one thing. Missed calls will always happen. I think this one is one that we'll never ever forget. I mean, it was so egregious and so bad. We'll never ever forget it. I mean, look. Do I think Sean Payton kind of crapped the bed after that and didn't stay focused and they still could have won the game? Yes. I thought he did a poor job as a head coach. But you're also asking me to admit that the refs cost him the game, and they did. I mean, that missed call cost the Saints playing in Atlanta. It just did. I think they could have done a better job of recovering after the really, really, really bad, egregious no call, but it did cost them a trip to the Super Bowl. It just did.
And look, would you guys say, like, when you saw it, like when you saw the play, were you like, what? There's no flag?
Really? I mean, it immediately blurted out, like, okay, somebody's getting ready to throw a flag. Like, you know it's coming. It's coming right now?
Yeah.
Okay, how about now? No flag?
Right.
What?
So you felt that way. You felt that way. But then think about, like, the Hogan catch or the Edelman catch where it's like, I'm not sure. The Sammy Watkins play catch. And you can look at it and you'd be like, hey, listen, like, I get it, guys. That's hard. It's moving fast. We got replay. Even with replay, I think it's touching the ground, but were you controlling it? Like, none of us are going to be going crazy over that stuff. It's the stuff where we're like, wait a minute. Guys, go back to the catch rule. Think how we used to react on the catch rule. We're like, now I'm pretty sure that Jesse James caught that and reached over the goal line. Now I'm pretty sure that Dez was reaching for the end zone. Like that, we get upset over the stuff that it's like, it's just so obvious. And that's the part where I'm like, wait a minute. Like, how are you letting this obvious stuff go? And really, You shouldn't in this day and age.
But that will be the price you pay. The byproduct of, if you go this route and you can challenge an interference, we're going to get into a lot of splitting hairs and a lot of ones that aren't as clear-cut as the one on Sunday. But you do have the security of knowing that could never happen again. You'll never have a blatant one go unchecked where there's nothing you can do about it.
But don't you feel like you're okay when they challenge something and they're like, play stands is called? Like, aren't you like, yeah, okay,
yeah, you disagree, but at least they looked
at it the other way.
Yeah.
But like, I'm okay with it, you know.
Yeah,
it's the ones where you're like, you know, it's been overturned and you're like, wait a minute, man, what video were you guys looking at? Because literally every person in the room with me that's not cheering for the same team or have a vested interest, they're all saying like, how is that the case? So that's the part of it that I think is frustrating is, you know, sometimes it's just obvious. And,
And look, I think I would go as far to say when the NFL admits that they've messed it up, because think about how many times they've told us, they've given us some lame excuse about, he didn't bat the ball out of it back at the end zone. It's like, guys, I was like, don't insult my intelligence. Like, I saw it.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas they've basically been like, yeah, you're right. We messed that one up.
Put together a list of what we need to bring for the Super Bowl party. We'll talk about it next week. And invite D-Mace, because he's a hermit. He, like, never leaves his house. So invite him, too. He just sits there and stares at his pool and pictures of himself.
Well, I was just going to say, what do you think D-Mace is doing right now? He's like
staring at pictures of himself. That's what he's doing.
He's like, I can't wait until I can get back out on that lawnmower and start cutting my grass with my shirt off.
He literally, he watches videos of himself. That's what he does all day. He never leaves his house, and he just watches videos of himself. So invite him. He needs to get out. He really does. So
I could see that. I haven't seen him in a while. So you know what? You're right about that. I normally bump into him.
He doesn't. I know. He's a hermit. He's a hermit. We'll talk about it next week, and we'll talk about the Super Bowl. Thanks, as always. Have a good week.
Good. Bye, guys.
Stay dry. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL expert. Back with more next. Where were the no-call in the Saints-Rams game rank? Worst calls of all time.
I got it number one.
It doesn't really go down as a worst call because it didn't happen, but it's always going to be remembered about being the worst no-call of all time.
But I tried to think, and we had this discussion. We were in Denver at the time, but our little announcer crew, Pete Weber, Hal Gill, Chris Mason, we were trying to go through our archives and our minds where it ranks as biggest blown calls that cost the team a championship. You heard Tim Hasselbeck say it right on. That cost the Saints the Super Bowl. They are going to the Super Bowl if that's called correctly. Right? It's a 99. Yeah, I guess the guy could have missed the field goal, whatever. They could have fumbled the snap. They could have had the Tony Romo. All of that stuff is possible. But we're talking about 99%. It's game over, right? So I think right now that's the biggest one I can think of. In that big stage, that big moment to blow a call like that. There have been plenty of bad calls, missed calls for one reason or another. But in that moment, with that at stake, I don't know that I can top anything. Now, the one that Pete brought up.
Buffalo Bills, I'm sure.
No, it was the Cardinals Royals. Remember the Don Denkinger?
Was it the Music
George
City Miracle?
No, the George Orta Chopper, 85 World Series, Royals against the Cardinals. Cardinals are leading 3-2 and up by a run in the ninth inning in game 6. And there's a chopper on the artificial turf. It's a close play. Pitcher's covering Todd Worrell. And clearly, if you look at the replay, the Cardinals had George Orta out. They called him safe. Don Denkinger, to this day, he knows he blew it, right? It's become a thing. But that was game 6, and the Cardinals still had the lead in that game. They could have worked their way through that inning and still won. And even though they ended up losing that game in the bottom of the ninth, they still could have won game 7, which they did not. They got blown out. But it's still right up there. That's a huge call that was missed in a giant game that was clear cut.
I think we've had some.
But what are some other ones that come to mind? I can't think of anything that compares to this.
We've done an interview on this, and I can't. Why am I drawing blanks on who were we talking? Well, it may have been Will. No, I mean C.M. Newton. I don't. The U.S. versus the Russians in basketball.
Who the 1972 Olympics.
72 Olympics.
Yeah. Okay, that's a big
one. Who did we talk to?
That's a great example.
And it was like, oh, my God, when they just laid everything out.
They did like 3 do-overs and 4 different. I mean, that was bad.
72 Olympics, U.S. and Russians.
Yeah, Soviets at the time. Yeah.
That was bad. Really, really bad.
Okay, good one. But let's start listing them because I still think you might come away with this one being – at the top of the list, just the blatancy.
It's going to be
of
it's going to be
there.
Up there. It has
but
to
what,
be.
But what else compares? Like I know for the Predator fans, they'll think of the Stanley Cup Finals, the two calls, the the inconclusive
game six
one.
In game one.
Right. The inconclusive skate of Philip Forsberg, which how could you possibly tell me that's conclusive? And then the one where Colton Sisson scores in game six, where they blew it.
Look, they blew it because, look, that if the Predators win, you can't say, well, you go to game seven, anything can happen. Anything. They should have won game six. Like game one, you know, yes, I agree. But it's game one. It's no, you know, there was a whole series. So to me, you can't. Game six ties the series.
Right.
You took a goal away. That was a goal. And I'm not saying that the Predators guarantee they win that game.
Right, because it was only the second period.
I know, but it probably changes the outcome of the game. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd say the
Hornquist goal probably doesn't happen. It doesn't top Sunday, though.
By the way, did you see the Sharks in the Capitals last night?
That was pretty wild. 7-6.
No, but did you see how it all happened?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see how the Sharks scored to tie it?
1 second left.
Was it a second? It was a second or less. That was a buzzer beater. That was like throwing up a half-court shot, and the Sharks did it and pushed it to overtime and won. Capitals were up 6-4 with 9 minutes to go at home and lost 7-6. Right. But anyway, I think the Colton Sissons game six, it has to be.
It hits home here, but it still would not rank
above.
No,
I understand. But if we're talking about something here locally, yes.
Okay, so – what else goes by? I've just got another text from a friend of mine here that I hadn't thought of in a while.
Do you want to take calls?
Let's take some calls.
I'll mention good one.
All right, what do you got?
Armando Galarraga's perfect game.
Yes, 2010. Oh. That was the Indians.
Yeah.
Indians and Tigers, right?
It was. Yeah. Galarraga was pitching for the Tigers.
What year was that now?
It had to have been 2010. Yeah.
Right before replay.
Jim Joyce.
Yeah.
Awful.
He was in tears.
Awful.
He was in tears.
Now it's a regular season game. But look, there haven't been how many perfect games have there been in Major League Baseball history?
Less than 20.
Yeah.
I think.
It was for a perfect game.
Right.
Like no hitters are special, but
the same thing as Dankinger in the 85 World Series, now there are measures you could take where that would be a non-story because you just look at the replay, boom. It's fixed.
Okay, let's do this. We've got loaded lines. We'll come back. We'll take phone calls to wrap up the third hour. 737-1025. The worst call ever. You fill in the blank.
In the biggest moment.
You fill in the blank. We'll take your calls next. Worst call ever, 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 ever was what? To each his own. There's no wrong answer. We'll start with Joel in Springfield. Worst call ever was what?
Oh, my goodness. I tell you. And the thing was that a call was made and then it was reversed. And it was Miami football team against Ohio State.
2002.
Okay, exactly. And there was a pass at the end zone, and the referee said, nope. And then some other ref threw a flag and said, nope. It was pass interference, and Miami, which had really just done Ohio State, the running back had like 60.
That's the
yards. That was Maurice Claret.
Claret. Thank you for the call, Joel.
So you've hit on it. In fact, that is I told you, I had a friend of mine that texted me. That's exactly the one that he did. That he referenced.
And who from Miami blew out their knee? Had the bad injury. Wasn't that the game?
Yeah, that was that game.
Who was it? What was the running back?
We'll think of it in a second. But it's a game-ending play.
Yes,
right. It's Craig Krenzel is the quarterback for Ohio State, and it was a phantom. Andre Johnson played for Miami. Mm-hmm. This was a loaded Miami team, pretty talented Ohio State team too, but. if they don't call that in the end zone on that play, the game is over and Miami wins.
Who was the linebacker that got drafted by the Titans that was on that team?
Was he from Bowling Green, Kentucky? Yeah, Robert.
Yes. Yeah. It is
Donnie Nicky, I think, was on that
team. Yes, he was. What was his name? Reynolds? Is that right?
Yeah, Rob Reynolds.
Robert Reynolds, right? Yeah.
That was a bad call.
It was bad. Call. That changed the national championship. That was game over.
Yeah, well, it ends the game.
Yes.
Essentially, that's right up there. That's right up there. Because I don't know that you could really debate that was the right call.
I don't think anybody really felt that was, like, in that spot, do you really make that call? Answer, I think everybody, no. You don't make that call.
A friend of mine who texted this, he said, I believe the official is now the mayor of Columbus.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Nate down in the borough. Worst call ever was?
Touchdown and touchback.
Touchdown and touchback.
The Seahawks-Green Bay game.
Is this the Monday Night Football game?
Yes.
Replacement
the one
refs.
Where
the replacement
one
refs.
Official raised his hands up for a touchdown.
Yep.
Then the other came in and said touchback without looking at each other. And, I mean, thankfully they got it right, we think. But at first you're like, well, which one is it?
That's got to be on the list. Nate, thank
you. It's on
you.
The list, but it's not. We're still not in the same
ballpark. Well, it was a regular season game.
Yeah.
It was bad. Hey, look, it was so bad that the full-time refs came back right after that. It was such a debacle. 737-1025. Let's stay down in the borough. John, worst call ever was?
When he tests the Verdi, quarterback sneak, ends up 2 feet from the end zone, and they call it a touchdown. And then any boxing event where at the end of it the announcers say, were the judges watching the same fight we were? So
which is most.
See ya.
Most.
Testaverde, I remember exactly the call you were talking about, but that's a regular season.
Regular season game.
Still not even in the same ballpark.
Jim Joyce, that was bad.
But that's a regular season
game. I know. But it cost a guy a perfect game.
I know. On the last out.
A perfect game. On the last out.
That was bad. But still, this is the one. It's the worst, right? Are we ready to say it? This is the worst call, worst non-call of all time.
Have we come close?
I don't think we've come close.
72 was that was for the gold, 72 right?
72 for the gold.
That was for the gold. So that's got to be
up there.
It's up there,
but that was a series of things, and the Denkinger is memorable, but I still think this is right up there.
Let's go.
Miami, Ohio State's a pretty good candidate.
That's a good one. Rob,
national championship.
Worst call ever was?
I think y'all just took mine. It was, and I don't remember the pitcher's name, but he had the perfect game, and it was on the last out, and the guy was clearly out, and he called him safe, and it blew his perfect game. And the reason I remember is because I think the next day, the next game, that pitcher was like he'd come out to the mound with the scorecard, with the roster, and the other umpire that blew the call, he was like teared up and everything.
Yeah,
I mean,
yep. Really, that was it. It was Jim Joyce.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway. All righty, that was mine, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's not to the magnitude of costing a team the Super Bowl, but it cost a guy a perfect game, and there's been less than 20 in the history of baseball. That's a pretty big deal. Eric in Burns, Tennessee. The worst call ever was?
Well, unfortunately, again, this is a regular season call, but it eventually did change the season and who won the national championship. So Colorado in the five down. Oh.
Yes,
yeah, that's true.
So,
it's a big blunder.
If that doesn't happen, there's probably a different national champion, or it's not shared. I believe it was shared.
It was Co. Yeah,
yeah, with Georgia Tech,
1990.
Yeah, so that call there definitely changed what happened in that football season, or blown call, I guess it was, or whoever couldn't keep track, or I'm sure there's been a documentary on that somewhere. But anyway, so that's mine.
Okay, thanks for the call. You have to dig really, really deep. And I don't know. I don't know if we're ever going to find anything of that magnitude. Because once again, we're saying – We're just looking for I think for here locally, it's not going to be compared on the – because, and two, we don't know how it would play out, but you'd have to admit, if it plays out where that goal truly costs them the game, and you're talking about a Game 7 winner take all for the Stanley Cup Final, anything can happen. I mean, who knows?
It's still only Game 6. Had it been Game 7, then it'd be right up there. But there are – it just goes to show you, too – with all the blown calls over the years, and there are always going to be calls that are missed. But very rarely can you say the referees cost us this game. But this is one where the referees cost the Saints the Super Bowl. You can understand the outrage by the New Orleans fans, and that will never go away, right? It's sometimes you're like, you're so mad in the moment, but then you go back and you're like, well, you know, it really wasn't that bad. This was, you can't get around it if you're the officials and you're the league.
A buddy of mine texted me and said Chuck Knobloch's phantom tag in the ALCS in 99.
Yeah, that was against the Red Sox.
Yeah,
I remember that game. Yankees were way better than the Red Sox, though. That they were the better team. I don't think the Red Sox were going to win that series.
But?
That was a big call. Big whiff.
By the way, what about the tuck? How could you? I mean, the Patriots went on to win the Super Bowl. Who knows?
The tuck rule?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Why not that?
It's up there. Divisional playoffs and not the AFC Championship game.
Still.
That was probably a game-ending play.
Maybe the Raiders win the Super Bowl.
If they call that. Maybe the Raiders win the Super Bowl, and maybe they come back and win the next Super Bowl because they did come back and get to the Super Bowl the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
How could that not be in there?
It's up there. Tuck rule's up there. But you know, they came up with this whole thing. But by rule, you know, that's the rule. That's what they were. They will not admit that that's a bad call. This one, within 10 minutes of the game being over, we missed that one.
How have we not had anybody call in a guy who is moving to Nashville or living here now? I know he's either built a house or bought a house in the Arrington Vineyards area.
The Buffalo.
Brett Hull. Anybody remember that play? Stanley Cup Final, Game 6. Anybody?
Game 5.
Was it 5?
Yeah.
I thought it was 6.
5.
Anyone? Anyone? Brett Hull?
I think
Hull?
It was Game 5.
I thought it was Game 6. Anyone?
How does that not up there?
Because in the rule, even though, as Brett Hull says very well, he did not interfere with the goalie. So today he'd be fine. But back then the rule was you could not be in the blue ice.
You think anybody in Buffalo or somebody who's moved here from Buffalo would call in and say that? I'd say yes.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, come back. Fourth and final hour. Speaking of that, we'll talk to Chris Mason. That's coming up next, 102.5 The Game.